Email latedebate@rte.ie.
Hello again. Now, we're still joined in studio by Ciara Keogh, Fine Gael TD for Mayo, Liam Quaid, Social Democrats TD for Cork East, Ray the Cronin, Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, and Senna Maloney, political correspondent with the Independent Newspapers. A number of listeners have been in touch on our last discussion of that HICWA report. Postgrad scientists wouldn't get away with testing on animals without supervision from a university ethics panel. There are serious questions about what was going on at CHI in terms of governance, says Luke. And the parents absolutely deserve answers and must be consulted in the first instance. That's a minimum starting point, surely, says Michael O'Reilly. Now, we're going to go on to the mother and baby home. Senan, I suppose, take us back to why Sheila Noonan was doing the job she was doing and maybe conclude ultimately with the response she got.
Yeah, she was doing it because Roderick O'Gorman didn't get very far in the last Dáil when he took up the baton, which has been lying around in government for, you know, maybe a couple of decades in relation to getting matching funding from religious orders and institutions where crimes have been committed against detainees. I mean, that's probably the safest word, and people under their care. It was estimated by government when dealing with the Mother and Baby Homes report that the level of compensation would cost 800 million. And then deducting the sort of county homes and the state institutions, they figured that the overall bill of compensation to people who had crimes and human rights abuses carried out against them, you know, for many, many decades, and we needn't rehearse them, but that the bill was going to end up at about 535 million in compensation in relation to religious homes. The state then took the view, well, look, you know, arguably the nation of Ireland was complicit in all of this, so we're proposing to 50% fund that, which means that the target to be raised from 8 religious orders was 267.5 million. And after years and years of cajoling and requesting and encouraging and asking, the sum total that we have today is just under 13 million.
And that is nearly 13 million by one congregation and 75 grand from another one.
And a building.
Yeah.
A building, yeah.
So it's a long way short. My maths was never very good, but certainly there's a quarter of a billion that seems to have gone a begging. And I think we should also name, if you'd indulge me, we should name the, apart from the congregations that and religious orders that made payments, we should perhaps list out those that didn't, that Sheila Noonan said in her report refused or didn't offer anything.
Or didn't accept responsibility in some cases, yeah.
They include the Congregation of Our Lady of the Good Shepherd, the Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary, the Congregation of the Sisters of Mercy, the Legion of Mary, which may not have very many assets, and of course the Church of Ireland as a whole through its representative church body.
Okay. Correspondent, social affairs correspondent Alva Keneally, got in touch with a couple of those organisations since the publication of the report today. The Church of Ireland's position is the Church of Ireland did not found, manage or own any of the homes mentioned in the report, said a spokesperson there. And the Sisters of Mercy said that they didn't cooperate with the Ernst & Young, the accountant's assessment of their assets for the purposes of offering compensation because, quote, the Sisters of Mercy never were and should not now be misrepresented as having legal responsibility for the county home and had no involvement with the distinct mother and baby homes. There is thus neither legal, moral nor ethical justification for the state's request that the Sisters of Mercy make a financial contribution to the scheme, said a spokesperson for the Sisters of Mercy. That was Sister Mary Louise White. It should also be said at the outset that the bill you talked about, Senan, the total applies only to people who spent more than 6 months in a mother and baby home. Anyone who spent less has been excluded from compensation for the purposes of this scheme. Where does it go from here, Ciara Keogh?
If you'll allow me just for one moment, as a new TD, I'm conscious that this is the first time I've ever spoken about this dark shadow on our history. And I just want to say it's crazy to me to think that I was 13 when the last home closed in 1988. And I just want to empathise with anybody who is feeling the hurt and devastation.
I think it was 1998,
was it? 1998, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I was 13. So I'm deeply disappointed in the response from the religious institutions. I think it's a slap in the face for the victims that are still surviving. I would urge them, as Minister Norma Foley has done, that there's still time to reconsider. It's welcome to get the 12.97 million from the bond securers. I think the conditional donation of 75,000 from Sisters of John of God, again, feels like a slap in the face to the survivors. So I would urge them to reconsider. And I know Norma Foley is also engaging with the Attorney General to see what options would be there to us.
Liam Quaid.
I think the response from the religious orders generally is one basically of contempt. For the victims of their, you know, systematic crimes. And it's really perplexing that the state's attitude has been to go cap in hand to these religious orders to elicit contributions, you know, to the redress scheme. These are extremely powerful and wealthy institutions who have systematically committed grave crimes against vulnerable people. And the government shouldn't be just making a weak moral case to them or a moral appeal. They should be using legal muscle. Take a test case, if necessary, against these orders to step up to their responsibilities for the harm that they've caused. These are institutions that surround themselves with armies of lawyers. We shouldn't be going to them with the begging bowl. And if you contrast that, the double standards between that and how the state responds to a vulnerable person who's trying to vindicate their rights. So, for instance, a recent parliamentary question response that I received around assessment of need showed that in an under 4 year period from 2021 to 2025, the state spent 7.9 million defending cases against families who are pursuing assessments of need for their children. This is in the context of a recruitment embargo or close to an embargo in the HSE. So this is how the state responds to, you know, an ordinary citizen trying to vindicate their rights, and yet they take this very weak attitude towards these very powerful, wealthy institutions who have caused incredible harm, intergenerational trauma.
Ray the Cronin.
Yeah, the government approach to this has been fundamentally flawed from start to finish. I'm here with two new TDs, and I'm sure you remember the first time you spoke in the Dáil how nervous you were. I remember the first time I spoke about the mother and babies and how angry and upset I was. Like, I've spoken to parents and children who were involved in this. You talk about the money that has been claimed, has been put by for this. There was a serious underspend last year. Claire Curran asked the minister, would they include the children who spent less than 6 months in the institutions? There's plenty of money to cover that, because the people aren't coming forward, because as the state expected, a lot of them are dead, perhaps, and they've never got to make this claim. So absolutely the children who are affected by the 6 month time in the institutions should be included in this. I spoke to one of the children who had spent less than 6 months in the institution. I remember there around 2 years ago, and she told me that all throughout her life going to school, she was known as the child who was born in the institution and whose mother had come back. And she actually left her home place and moved to Dublin. Never, she said, foot back in her village again. Like, can you imagine that, not being able to go to your home place because of the effect that this had on her life? Of course, children who spent less than 6 months in these institutions were affected. But the way that the state has dealt with these institutions, they've more or less prioritised their sensibilities over the victims, and it's absolutely disgraceful. It's one of the reasons why there's only one Green TD in the Dáil at the moment. They absolutely sold the mother and babies down the river for the sake of a few bicycle lanes, and it's not good enough.
Well, there might be a bit of politics coming.
Okay,
coming
all right.
There.
I'm sure they would dispute that. But I mean, look, Senator Maloney, as a number yourself and a number of people have characterised it here. You know, there was an abuse of human rights. The state is the custodian of the constitution and everything else.
Sure.
Primary responsibility for the citizens of a state rest with the state, and if they don't supervise services that are delivered within the boundaries of that state, you know, that's where the responsibility lies. So much and all, as people may be aghast at the response of the religious orders, is there, I suppose, a danger that the ultimate bearer of responsibility in all of this gets to have a bit of a lightning rod?
Well, you could make that argument. I don't share that view myself. I know where you're going. You're talking about, you know, I wouldn't start from here. You're going back to the origins of the state, slightly the outsourcing of health and education to the Catholic Church, which we know now was a very bad idea. And you could also make the argument that the state's ability now to extract its pound of flesh from those institutions has also been hampered by a historical thing that happened when, you know, these disclosures began to be made. I think it might have been the Ryan report. But we had a former Fianna Fáil minister, Michael Woods, who, by the way, was a very religious man. I don't know whether that had any bearing. I'm sure it didn't. But he gave an indemnity to the religious orders. And the state in that situation picked up the bill in its entirety.
Anything over and above, I think, was it 200 and something million in the overall scheme of things, and it ultimately wound up costing the state substantially more. It should be said, Ciara Keogh, that a lot of religious organisations from about the 1980s onwards, and this isn't exclusively involving people or orders and organisations involved in this, but founded trusts in order to preserve, as they put it, the ethos of schools, for example, and others, which meant that the assets of those orders were tied up in trusts and could only be used for the purposes with which they were put into the trust, which offers them some legal protection. Now, I mean, the Attorney General is being talked about this, but I'm sure there was quite a lot of very senior legal advice taken in the establishment of these trusts. Should people be optimistic that there's any mechanism for unpicking some of the assets of these organisations?
Look, I'm interested to see what comes back from the Attorney General, and I think, as you say...
Sorry, 128 million was the figure in the Michael Woods deal. Yeah, sorry, go on.
And I think the survivors want accountability from the religious organisations, and we want them to come forward and step up to the mark. But at the same time, trying to shake these organisations and empty out the money, if we're not going to get it, I think one of the things, and Rita touched on it, is that, you know, there was a bit of an underspend last year, and one of the things I think would be really good to focus on is, you know, the likes of, say, in Great Britain, we've 13,000 people who are, you know, we think, you know, that will be eligible for this scheme, and trying to get the uptake and trying to get the money to these survivors and the enhanced medical cards, as well as trying to hold the religious organisations accountable and ask them to step up to the mark. But when we go back to some of this abuses back in 1922, and we go back to our earlier conversation around, is it the surgeon, is it the governance, you know, a lot of these abusers will have since passed on. And as you talked about, Senan, some of the monies of the churches were in health, their education, so we want them to be accountable. But I do think that, you know, we've had 6,300 applications to date for this redress scheme, and there's, as Rita pointed out, there's probably thousands and thousands more. So I would really love to see that uptake.
For the avoidance of doubt, we're not putting surgeons in the same bracket as historical perpetrators of abuse in institutions, just to make that absolutely clear. We wouldn't stand over that. Yeah,
I think it's important to say as well that the exclusion of tens of thousands of children on the 6 month rule that we spoke about, and the exclusion of children who were boarded out, was based on a completely fallacious understanding of attachment and trauma, and that was thoroughly debunked by
some institutions not even included in the first place, specifically right. Excluded from the...
Yeah. You know. But all of that was thoroughly debunked by mental health clinicians, the Psychological Society of Ireland in Oireachtas hearings, and yet that exclusion prevailed. And I think there's a good reason to believe that if the religious orders had contributed more of a fair share to the redress scheme, that that scheme would have been more inclusive and that it would have been more appropriate in terms of compensation.
You don't think that's letting the government off the hook at any point? I mean, they had no guarantee they were ever going to get contributions from the religious orders.
They had no guarantee, but I don't see the emphatic political pressure. I don't see the attempt to take them on legally. Right. That would have really exhausted that.
There's another issue here. Yeah.
Ray the Cronin, yeah.
The assets of these religious institutions amount to over €1 billion. They've plenty of money that they can put this.
Well, I was just going to say that some of them have incorporated themselves, not just in trusts, but also overseas. And it's hard to see the joint. They've segued into big healthcare outfits in many, many countries. I don't want to specifically name any particular order, but there are brand names now. Mm. They've gone beyond what they were. We only have jurisdiction in relation to cash that's, you know, within this territory, you know, the 26 counties pro tem. But there are other assets. There's land within the state. There are buildings. We've been offered a building, and I think the one of the things
but
that's
where the conditions
back,
of the trust comes in again. Yeah. So land that has, say, been bequeathed to people, but to religious orders, they have argued in the past has been bequeathed with, you know, education in mind.
Although, and the, you know, let's be frank about it. The government doesn't want to be a Henry VIII and go to the dissolution of the monasteries, and I don't think it wants to take on. Well, we'll see.
Probably doesn't want the multiple marriages either. Kira Kyo, though, on the issue of the 6 month cutoff point, you mentioned the UK there. It came up recently. The Liam Conlon, Labour MP in the House of Commons, put legislation before the House that would have allowed applicants to the state institution scheme to apply for it and avail of it without it affecting welfare benefits. And on foot of that, a couple of weeks ago on the Saturday programme I also present, we interviewed the daughter of Philomena Lee, who really welcomed that. But she also said that the 6 month rule was arbitrary, unfair, and if healing was to be brought to the survivors of mother and baby homes, those people should absolutely be included. I mean, what's your view on that?
I think, looking here, I know that the first annual report of the scheme is due to Minister Foley on the 30th of June, and two reviews are to take place after that, the first one being the 1st of September 2026, and this is a 5-year scheme. Mm. So maybe if this is something that's, you know, people are very passionate about, and as you say, this needs to debunk it, maybe that's something that can be looked at.
And if someone dies before those reviews are concluded?
I know the review isn't going to be before 2026 or before the 30th of June.
You have to remember that civil servants wrote a lot of these rules for the ministers, you know, so civil servants were looking, you know, they're doing their job, trying to minimise the exposure for the state. And I think the 6 month rule has to do with adoptions. And a lot of those people we know were adopted by Americans, and the state doesn't want, you know, 76-year-old Americans coming over here saying, pay me €1 million, please, because that's money going outside the state.
That's you know. Your that's your thesis on it, is it?
Oh, but I really believe that. It's part
right.
of it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We are going to move to another issue. That is the rolling situation with tariffs. And we're going to take another break. We'll come back after that.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.